Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit OlatheKia.com.
It's time for the Midwest Outdoors with Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin. Brought to you by Reed Chevrolet, the Hearing Connection in St. Joe, the Sports Medicine Store, and Sportsman's Outfitters and Marine. Now, here are Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Midwest Outdoors. All three of our listeners are gathered up. We've got two in the studio. My co-host, the greatest American to walk the face of the earth, bar none, Mark Tobin, and Doug Greg Thompson are here in the studio. He looks more like a Doug than he does a Greg.
I know he does.
Yeah, from a distance especially.
And he definitely has a face built for radio.
And the reason I get confused is I talk to Doug constantly, Doug Thompson, and he was number four. You know, you met him with the Blue Angels.
Yeah, what a guy.
What a guy. An old snooze that was right. With him. Couldn't hit a duck if his life depended on him. And here he is flying around this multi-million-dollar jet, has no hand-eye coordination whatsoever. I don't understand it. And the greatest thing about when we shot a black goose that fell out just past the decoys, Snooze went out to get it, and the goose whipped him. Beat him beyond recognition. And I'm standing on the levee, and I can hear him out there in the corn squalling. The dog's barking, and I can see the water flying in the air. I'll never forget it. I never laughed so hard in my life. Oh, well.
I love that.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. I'm your host, Fred Ramsey, and here with Mark Tobin, my co-host, and Greg Thompson is so graciously came by to sit in with us here on the studio. And we've got, who we got lined up for guests?
Dr. Scott Krug.
Krug.
Yeah. That's close.
Yeah, that's close.
You think that made him mad?
No, I don't think so. He's a great guy. He's a little more anal than Matt. He's a little more, you know, he's an anesthesiologist, so everything's just got to be perfect. But he's one heck of a nice guy and a heck of a friend. I've been a friend of his since 2003. I met him in the jungle in Brazil, and interesting guys, fished all over the world.
Yeah, so hopefully we can give our listeners maybe some types of places to go to put on their bucket list today.
Yes.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah. I got a lot of feedback from last Saturday's show about riding elephants in the nude and going and how it would chafe you.
Yeah, we did learn that we need to wear pants if we go elephant riding.
Yes. It's not very often, you know, you go with elephant and fishing rod.
No. Never heard of such a thing.
Never, ever. But, you know, we do kind of attract strange humans.
Well, strange.
For some, see?
Yes.
And right here in the studio.
Yeah, very true.
Well, short story long, Matt's bucket list was yellow cheek carp. So I text Scott and ask him if he would talk with Matt. Well, lo and behold, the next morning I get a satellite text back with a picture. He was in China last week. He just got back the day before yesterday.
Wow.
So we got a fresh fishing report. I guarantee you, nobody else. We got a fresh fishing report. There's nobody in the Kansas City area but this show that's got a fishing report from China.
This is true. I'll drink to that, which I have been.
I'll be interested to talk to him about, you know, how welcome are we Americans in China?
They don't want us over there.
I wouldn't think, but
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a cool looking fish. I mean, these.
Can you blame them? We've done everything in the world to him. You know, I was nestled in my bed last night and hear the rain slapping against the side of my house. The wind, I thought I'm going to nail the door shut.
Unreal.
That old shack I live in, and it's all leaning over and water's coming in. And it was just unbelievable, that deal. And I just thought, on the way down, I wonder if fish ever drowned.
Well, if there's a chance, it's going to happen right now.
This would be it. How high is Tuttle Creek right now?
52 feet. Now, listen to this. Here's some lake levels for you.
Wow.
Perry Lake over on the Kansas side, 26 feet high. Clinton Lake, 16 feet high. Now, this is before the rain that we got last night, and we had a lot of rain last night.
A lot of rain.
Pomona is 24 feet high. Melvern, 16 feet high. Hillsdale, 10 feet high.
Whoa.
Milford's 22 feet high.
Milford?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Truman's 27 feet high. Caw Lake in Oklahoma is 37 feet high. Keystone in Oklahoma, Keystone Lake is 32 foot high. It's just insane amounts of water. Lake of the Ozarks is right at normal pool, though. So, you know, the moral to the story is if you're going to be fishing this weekend, you know, what a crummy weekend, Memorial weekend. A lot of people have an extra day off, have a long weekend, and then you got to deal with all of this. Most all of the parks down around Truman, the camping parks are closed. Uh-huh. There's a couple of still. There's only three ramps open on Truman. Sparrowfoot, Berry Bend, and Shawnee Bend are the only three ramps. Yeah. Everything else is closed. And there's a lot of ramps around all these local lakes that are closed right now. So God, what a mess.
What about Smithfield? It's got to be high, too.
I have not got a lake level on Smithfield. I'll look that up here.
That's unbelievable.
I don't know how high it is, but they had a report on television last night, and the water's up high, but a bass boat can still go under the bridge, but just barely.
Well, that's not bad, then.
Yeah.
That's not as bad as I thought it would
be. And they're
be.
Catching fish.
Yeah. You know, that's the whole thing. You know, this spreads your fish out. And I've got guys that have taken a few days off. They're down on Truman as we speak. And they can't find them. Can't find them on the locator. And he called me and said, you think any fish left in this thing? And I said, well, yeah. I said they're back in the weeds and up on the bank on the edge of the thing. You know, and I think it's a whole different pattern you'd have to fish.
Well, yeah, there's so much more. Yeah, Truman Lake, when it's 5 feet high, it doubles its surface area.
Oh,
so it goes
goodness.
From like 55,000 acres to over 100,000. And, you know, we're 27 foot high right now. I can't imagine how many. So there's a lot of places for those fish to go get and hide. I know back in 93, we had a bad flood back then. And I think Truman got over 30 foot high then.
Yeah, I think it was.
And I can still look as we go across the Osage River bridge, the mile long bridge. I can look back to the west and there's a group of trees that is a good half a mile away from the lake at Normal Pool, and we were catching fish in those when it was flooded.
Trees.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just bizarre.
Yeah.
This pattern will not stop.
No. And more rain this weekend and up till Tuesday.
Yeah. And then Wednesday, we're going to go into a drought.
Yeah. The spigot will get turned off completely.
But when it happens, you darn right it will. It'll go from one extreme clear to the other. You wait and see.
Stockton and Pomme de Terre are both 20 feet high, and all that water in Stockton and Pomme de Terre has to come down through Truman.
Yep.
So they're going to be running water out of Truman for a long time. They've shut it down this week. They're not running any water because of flooding downstream.
Rumor running around, somebody caught a 22-pound hybrid below the dam at Truman.
Supposedly, yeah. It was supposed to be a state record, but there's been some controversy about
Uh-oh.
That. Some people are questioning whether it's true or not. I haven't seen anything on the Missouri
I
Conservation.
Looked.
Yeah, there's nothing up there about that. So I don't know if the guy's telling the truth or not, but it's still wherever.
Fishermen that would lie?
I know. Can you imagine such a thing?
What?
Preposterous.
Yeah. Unheard of.
Fishermen or a politician?
Well.
Neither one of them would lie to you. They're the straight shooters.
I'll tell you how far this is affecting. I had friends that were going to fish Venice, Louisiana last weekend. They had to cancel the trip. The water coming out of the Mississippi has raised so high that where we put our boats in there, it's clear up in the parking lot there. So I've got a trip the second week of July, and I'm wondering whether I'm going to be able to go on it.
Oh, you poor thing. I feel so sorry for you.
Well, thank you. I
appreciate
it. Looking
forward to it. Gavin's Point up on the Missouri River went from 55,000 cubic feet a second to 60,000 cubic feet a second.
Now, that comes right into the Missouri River, doesn't it?
That's it. That's
that
the
is
dam
the
on the Missouri River.
Okay.
That is it. And here we go again. You know, it's just going to be unbelievable. It's just crazy. It's a good thing that at little town of Elwood, Kansas, they sandbagged the top of the government levee there. Good thing they left the sandbag there. That's all I can tell you. Because it is probably going to get back bizarre again. I think there at Rulo, we were 27.1. I think the river level is supposed to be around 17. So we was 10 foot, a little over 10 foot over. And I think that set some kind of new record up there.
I mean, it just goes on and on.
It's just weird.
If you're going to go fishing this weekend, you probably Lake of the Ozarks is probably one of the best bets because it's not fluctuating like all these other lakes are. And then a lot of these city and county lakes need to go to visit our good buddy Joe Falco over at Sportsman's Outfitter and Marine and get one of those Jackson fishing kayaks.
Saw another couple had a pair of them on their trailer.
Is that
trailer,
right?
A special kind of built trailer for them.
Well, this would be the weekend to use one.
And they were heading out somewhere. They were talked to him just briefly, but they had 4 days off to go fishing.
Wow.
And I don't know where they were going, but it was raining, and I hollered at him across the parking lot.
Well, you can do things in those kayaks that you can't do in a regular boat. And that's going to be important right now. There's a lot of debris out on these lakes right now. But yeah, check them out. Sportsman's Outfitting and Marine. Those Jack's High. They got some that you can pedal, or you can even put a trolling motor in them. Now, how cool is that?
Yeah, I looked at their website again last week, and you know the thing about Jackson, it's got something in your budget.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, you don't have to put out $48,000 for a Ranger.
No.
You know, you can get in there $995. I think I saw one for. You know, and of course you start adding on, you know, but it's they are laid out so good.
Right, and they're so stable.
Yeah. And you don't have to have a boat ramp open.
Yeah, right.
That's true.
And that's a problem.
Carry it on
right
down
now.
There, put your hip boots on, carry it down, and
absolutely.
Get in the boat
yep.
and go
absolutely.
Fishing.
Absolutely.
I don't know. I guess it'll end someday. I don't know. But I just wonder, do fish drown? You know, that's a good. If you have a fisheries biologist on, we'll have to ask him.
Well, next week, we're going to have Shane Bush, the biologist down on Table Rock and Taneycomo, on next week. And I want to find out how this is going to affect the shad spawn, you know, because they spawn a lot later. This is normally when they're starting to spawn. So I'm kind of curious how this high water is going to affect that. Because that could be important.
I think it would help them.
Well, you would think. Now, I think, as with anything, if they start dropping the water at the wrong time,
yeah,
that could be a problem.
What about water temperature? We definitely don't have as warm a water temperature.
No, that's true. Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Normally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I up at the duck club, we don't have the weeds growing like we usually do. You know, it's just been so cold.
Yeah.
One morning I was up, it was 39 degrees.
Goodness.
And then that Friday, I think it was 91 degrees.
Yeah.
You know, I had to turn the air on. But just weird weather pattern. And getting weirder all the time.
Well, with all this rain coming in, the one good thing about it is it can really turn the catfish on. And if you've got any kind of a lake or stream or any creek that runs into any of the lakes, area lakes or ponds, there's a fresh supply of food getting washed down into these lakes, and the catfish know it. So get anywhere where there's water coming into a reservoir and take some night crawlers and go fish out there, or even hot dogs. Hot dogs work good, too. And you will stack up on the catfish right
wow.
now.
They had the big tournament up here at the Caw, where it goes into Missouri, last weekend. I think it had 24, 26 boats, maybe. Gray matter doesn't line up like it used to, but 50 pounds to win it. And I think there was only three boats. Might have been more than that, but it was just, you know, catching Blue Cat, a 50-pound to win it tournament, generally, you know, you'll have a 50-pounder or a 40 or something, you know. And it's just, I don't know where they're at. And the guys were calling me and said, where are they? I said, I don't know. I wouldn't have no idea about them kind of deal. Mm-hmm. They were out on the river, and they went behind dike lines. They went in the hot water. They went everywhere trying to graph them out, and they...
What in the world?
I guess they disappear. Would be, you know, I think the little rivers, like the Thompson, the 102, the Grand, the Osage, or the smaller rivers, I think they go up there. Yeah, I don't know that, but.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. All of the worms and things that are getting washed in with with all the fresh rain.
And maybe a little less current. I don't know if that, it depends which river you're on, but, you know, I don't know where they go. But, you know, there's some holes and logs and stuff in there. They could get out of that current, you know. And the thing I always, and of course when we talk about flathead, which is my weakness, but they're lazy. Let's just put it that way. They want to just open their mouth and grab the bait. They want it to swim into their mouth, basically, and they don't get aggressive and go after it as much, I don't feel, on the deal. So. And then Blue Cat, of course, I think they'd eat a shopping cart if they got the chance, you know. But just weird, weird time. So what the heck? I don't know. I don't know when it's going to stop. It's actually kind of spooky.
Yeah, this is kind of unprecedented. I mean, I haven't seen a stretch like this past month. I just don't remember a stretch like this.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. We like to plant some corn at our duck club, but we had to put floats on the planter.
Yeah.
Whoever invents that's going to get rich, you know, this year. But, boy, I tell you, that river up there and those poor farmers, I mean, it's devastated them. Some of them got 6 foot of sand over the top of their field, 4 foot. They're out of business forever.
Did we find the owner of the barn?
No. That's laying up there, too. Now, I'm going to ask some guys about that. I might have been hallucinating.
But you've seen a lot of different things that have washed in from the flood.
Well, the weirdest one this year was that guy come float down there dead, you know, and I'm sitting there just breaking light. And I went, oh, my, how am I going to get him out of the water? Great big old fat guy, you know. and it ended up being a sow, big old sow. You know, with his belly sticking up and their arms sticking out like this. And
gosh.
I thought, woo, man. But at first light, when I could see only about 100 yards, boy, it looks just like a human out there floating in the water. Scared the bejeevers out of the bay.
No
kidding. Yeah, but it was a sow. I got talking to a bunch of guys up through there, and I said, who's raising hogs up in this river bottom? Nobody.
It probably came from Nebraska.
Who knows where that hog came from? You know, I saw everything up in there. I saw a dead horse. I saw dead cows. You know, I thought I saw a human. It wasn't, you know, but.
Nobody knows how, except the locals up there, how bad it really got.
Oh,
You don't see it reported.
Oh, no. Nobody. And the hardest part about it to me is you got to rebuild. And that's when you need your support. And that's when you need your help. And everybody runs up there for a photo op. All the politicos, Greg Now is one, and they finally help some of these people. The county roads are gone. The bridges are gone. You just stand there and shake your head. The levee, I think there's 52 levee breaches between Omaha and St. Joe that are major, what they call major. And you can't get in there to fix them now because the water's so high. You can't get out there with a dozer or a dynaho and that kind of thing. So what the hey?
Unreal.
Tell you what, we're going to take a little bit of a break. We are brought to you by King City Lumber Company, my favorite sponsor, one of the greatest guys. Well, these guys, Marty and Monty Tunks, are the finest humans I've ever known in my entire life. They're honest, sincere, and they're dedicated to their craft. If you want an outbuilding, whether it be a loafing shed or a hay barn or a place for your pony, these are the guys that you want to do it. Go to kingcitylumber.com. You know, I logged on there. I thought I'd spend a few minutes on there. I ended up spending like 40 minutes on their website. They are fantastic people. They're master craftsmen. If it's not right, they'll make it right. They are the best I've ever been around. King City Lumber, and I mean this from my heart, too. KingCityLumber.com. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. Take a little break. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. We are brought to you proudly, I should say, too, by my good friend Terry Lee, Highway Trailer Sales Incorporated. First time in a long, long time they've actually got a trailer sale. So if you need a trailer to pull behind your 18-wheeler, whether you're hauling grain or if you're hauling 2x4s or whatever you're hauling, they have their trailers on sale. Plus, they got 10-bay garage, and they will get you in, get you out if you have a bimp or need the brakes or leaf springs or whatever you need on your trailer. These are the guys that you want to do it because they take it very, very seriously. They're very professional. They are located at 1815 Southern Road. That's just west of Worlds of Fun up here on 435. So go out and see my good buddy Terry. He will be a friend of yours for life. That's how nice a guy this guy is. Highway Trailer Sales Incorporated up here off 1850 Southern Road. Just think the world of this guy. He's a wonderful person. Secretary doesn't like me, but that's okay. That's all right. Can you blame her?
No, not at all. No.
She hung up on me.
Smart lady.
I said, this is Fred Ramsey. Click. I don't blame her. You know, my past probably was around somewhere. I don't know. 1850 Southern Road, Highway Trailer Sales. My good friend Terry Lee. You're going to enjoy him. I guarantee you. One of them people you meet in your life and you go, wish I'd known him a long, long time ago. You know,
not enough of those kind around.
Yeah, what the hey. I'm going to have a little bit of a trivia question for you guys. Since how you guys are fishermen and you don't, I'm trying to convert you to duckaholics, which is the worst disease you can ever have. And I'm not having much luck with either one of
you.
Well,
it's just timing is bad. You know, duck season comes around the best time of the year to go fishing.
This is true.
Not that there's a bad time to go fishing, but.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you this question.
Okay.
And I'm going to score points and you hit this buzzer. Anyway, what is the primary cause of duck nest failures? Farm machinery, nest abandonment, predation, adjusted rate mortgages.
I'm going to go with farm machinery.
I would say predation.
Predation, number one.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, so you've got 50 points out of that.
All right.
You're doing
game
fine.
Over. Game over.
Here's one I thought was kind of weird, and I don't know if we call this apropos or not, but when does a drake typically abandon his mate?
When she gets fat and starts smoking and drinking.
Quit that. Oh, you can't say that on the air.
Okay.
After they mate.
During the incubation or soon after the clutch hatches, that's B. Once the ducklings are able to fly, never ducks mate for life after meeting her mother.
It's got to be after meeting mother.
All no, the above. Say,
yeah, right. It would be after the ducks leave the clutch.
No, well, you know, some, that's actually right, but some of the drakes stay with them. Certain species, the very small species. Mallards don't. Mallards go see around.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to get a pack of cigarettes and be right back.
It was
typical male. They just want one thing. Yeah. You know, you can't trust none of them. Mm-hmm. I'm one.
They don't mate. I don't think ducks mate for life, do they?
No.
Now, geese do.
No. That's not true.
It didn't?
No. That's a misnomer.
Ah, all right.
The deal. That's a... No.
My mom every year, for as long as I can remember, years and years and years, 30 years plus, has ducks that come to her pool. The pool's covered and the water's dirty and they come. And it was last year, there was a male and a female in the pool. And I guess its real mate came flying in. And boy, you talk about squawking to beat hell.
Ah.
The two girls did not like each other, and the guy duck, he just kind of sat back and like, I didn't do this. I didn't invite her, you know. But, wow. Oh, my gosh, they just
had
went
fight,
at each
huh?
other. Yeah, big time. Huh. It was fun to watch. Huh. Just like
I've never had a woman fight over me. That's for darn sure. I just take him. Yeah, all right. Ducklings prefer to feed most heavily on what food sources? A, insects. B, freshwater invertebrates, C, fruits and snacks, or D, A and B.
I'm going with A anyway.
A and B.
Yeah. Is it A and B?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In general, approximately.
It's easy for you to say.
Yeah, really. How many nests must hatch successfully to sustain a duck population? 90%, 70%, 50%, or 20%? Ooh, that's a good one. I don't even know. I'm going to cheat. I'm going to go over here. 80%.
Wow.
Oh, that's a lot higher than I would
guess. That's not good with the weather the way it is.
That's really high.
That is really, really high. So anyway, now when you get to the cocktail party and that awkward moment comes up, you know, and nobody knows what to say, you could always bring up, say, what is the nest success ratio, what it takes to maintain the flight coming south? And everybody will look at you like,
hey, what is the matter with you?
You finally lost it again. You know. Oh, well. I just thought it was
interesting.
You know what the number one state for the harvest of waterfowl is?
California.
Yes. You know why?
I don't know why.
107-day season.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Well, we get 60.
Dang.
They get 107 days.
I had heard that. I wouldn't have guessed that, but I had heard that before.
It is amazing to me. I think Texas.
I would have thought Texas,
I'm going on
Louisiana.
Gray matter, but I think Texas is like number two, or it might be Oklahoma, and then I think Arkansas. You would think Arkansas.
Right.
You know, because of the way it is down there, but that's not exactly true on the deal. So,
how about country? Do you know which country?
Don't know. That's another good question. I would assume if you're going to talk countries, would be Canada. You know, I don't know that. But
speaking of duck trivia, do you know why ducks fly south for the winter?
Here we go.
What? I have no clue.
Because it's too far to walk.
Da-dum-dum. Where's my drum roll?
It's true.
Also, hey, here's some things that we need to talk about. July 13th is the Delta Waterfowl chapter here in Kansas City. You guys log on to deltawaterfowl.com. That is the coolest. I went to it last year. That was one of the coolest darn things. I've been to a jillion Ducks Unlimited banquets. This was different. This was more upbeat, more fun, greater prizes, giveaways, auctioned. It was really, really cool. So go to the website, deltawaterfowl.com, and they will give you all the particulars of this thing. I think they were sold out of tickets last year, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and we probably don't need to really talk about it, but if you want to go, you better be getting logged on. They got some tables that are available on the deal. Now then, if you can't get onto that one, here's the one we're doing up in St. Joe. This is called the Squaw Creek Chapter of Delta Waterfowl.
Love the name.
Yeah. Boy, it'd be upset a lot of people. This is going to be at the Knights of Columbus Hall. It's 1205 North 49th Terrace in St. Joseph, Missouri. And platinum sponsor is $1,000 for a table. You get 8 event tickets. You get 8 Delta Waterfowl memberships and hats and koozies. Reserve preferred seating, preferred advertising on social media during the event, and 10 chances at sponsor-only guns. So you're probably going to, you know, and some of these guns are $1,700 guns, $1,000 guns. You know, they're going to be, we haven't got exactly what we're giving away yet. And if you don't want to pony up for $1,000, which I can understand, gold sponsor is $500. You get 8 event tickets, 8 Delta Waterfowl memberships, reserve seating, advertise on social media, and 4 chances to win the prizes.
Good odds.
You're really good odds. And if you don't want to do that one, then here's $250. You get 4 event tickets, 4 Delta memberships, reserve seating, advertising on social media, and 1 chance at a sponsor gun. So if you want to get involved with that, you can contact at 816-206-0973. That's Trevin Reed, one of my favorite friends, Reed Chevrolet guy. 816-206-0973 or trevin.reed@reedauto.com. Please get involved with that. Who we got lined up?
Dr. Scott Krug.
Dr. Krug.
We're going to go fishing around the world.
Okay. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. Take a little break. We'll be right back with you. That brings back old memories, yeah, doesn't it?
At least it brings back memories, yeah. That's good. That's good for both of us.
It is?
Yes. Well, good what, Saturday morning.
What do you do put in my coffee? What is this stuff?
That's happy coffee.
That's happy coffee?
Yeah. Some kind of a chocolate concoction.
Chocolate bourbon?
Uh-huh.
What did you try it?
Yeah, that's really scary good.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. Just like all coffee, though, kind of leaves a little taste in your mouth.
Mm.
But that's... You wouldn't think chocolate would be very good, chocolate bourbon, but that's pretty tasty stuff.
Yeah. Well, the guys finally hit one.
Anyway, good Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Midwest Outdoors. I'm Mark Tobin. That voice you heard over there is Waterfowler Hall of Famer, Mr. Fred Ramsey. And joining us in the studio, Greg Thompson. And Greg, we've got a buddy of yours on the phone.
Well, we do. We do. Dr. Scott Krug from Wisconsin.
Good morning, Dr. Krug. How are you doing?
I'm good, guys. How are you all?
Well, great. Thank you for being with us. I understand you just got back from China. Is that correct?
2 days ago, I got back and still recovering a little bit from the jet lag situation.
How long a flight is that?
Well, from Shanghai to Chicago, it's about 13 to 14 hours, depending on your tailwind.
That's a long time in the air.
Oh, man.
Well, tell me about what is it like to fish in China? Have you been there before, number one?
This was my second trip. I went last year at this time. We were pursuing the yellow-cheek carp. And it's a different situation from what you might think or expect or have experienced in other foreign countries because it is China.
Right.
And the rules are a little bit different there. And it's difficult to access the lake. And we're not in a remote territory like you might see on a peacock bass trip or a Canadian trip. This is a lake in the Shanghai region that's part of a national park system, if I can phrase it that way, and actually quite developed, very urban setting and a lot of other things going on related to the lake. And it's very controlled, and you just can't get in there easily. And then when you are fishing it, you have a Chinese individual who's your fishing guide, and he's wearing a suit.
Well, cheerio.
Totally different from what I've experienced elsewhere.
Seriously, wow, that's crazy. Well,
yeah.
How safe is China?
Oh, I didn't feel unsafe at all on either trip. It's a very progressive, modern country. I felt a lot like I was in the Midwest. The roads are excellent. The cars are excellent. It's a very prosperous country, and I never felt at risk, unlike some of the other trips that I've been on, like Papua New Guinea and perhaps even Brazil at times.
Did you feel welcome there?
Yes, I did. The people that we were dealing with are actually quite friendly and nice, but of course there's always a language barrier there, and they weren't very good at English, and I know nothing about Mandarin, and so you don't really know what they're truly thinking, but we are warmly received and well taken care of.
But the guides wear a suit. That is bizarre.
You'll try that, Tobin.
It is different.
Yeah. What kind of lures are you using? Go ahead.
Well, that, just to elaborate quickly on the suit, they're part of the park system involving the lake, and everyone is dressed in a suit like that.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's the mandatory attire like you might see at Disneyland, only they wear suits. And what lures we're using, well, one of the attractions for me for this fish is it's an apex predator. It's a big fish. It eats other fish. And it's a lot like the muskie we have here in Wisconsin in the Midwest, and that's my favorite fish to pursue. And so I'm using muskie tackle and muskie plugs.
Wow.
And so it's a natural fit for me as a fisherman.
Well, we just barely touched on it, but what was it about China that drew you there? It was the gold cheek carp, is that correct?
Yellow cheek. Right.
So tell me about that fish.
Well, it's not at all like a carp like we know here in the States. This fish has jaws and teeth like you would have with a muskie, although they don't have all the teeth of a northern pike in a muskie.
Wow.
But they look like a cross between a tarpon, a muskie, and a few other fish.
Wow.
That eat other fish, and they get quite big. They can approach 120 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
And they're very, very challenging to catch, extremely difficult to catch.
Just because of their strength, or what makes them, are they just not that plentiful?
They're not plentiful, and they're very difficult to get to strike a bait, at least the big ones. And when you do get a hit, it's not uncommon to not get hooks into the fish.
Hmm.
And then when you do hook one, it's like you've tied your lure to the back of a bus and you got to hang on because they'll spool
wow.
you. So you're chasing the fish down if it's a bigger fish to catch up with it, and then it takes a while to land them.
What test braid are you using?
Well, I normally use the 80-pound Spectron line on my bait casting reels, like when I'm fishing muskies or the other fish I chase, because it just seems to work out well, and that's more than adequate for this fish. There's not a lot of snags like you might have with the peacock bass or the New Guinea bass. You don't get broken off by these fish. So I would use 80, but a person could probably use 40 or 50-pound test line and be okay.
What's a good day of fishing, number-wise, on those fish?
One.
Wow.
Wow, that's insane.
A fish of 10,000 cast.
Well, that's a muskie.
It truly is.
Yeah.
It truly is. You can go there and spend a week and not catch one.
Wow.
You have to be prepared to cast a lot and work very hard and hope that luck is on your side.
That's insane.
Have you considered counseling?
Yeah, really?
You are a doctor.
Well,
but I know you're
not
a doctor.
Like my wife.
I know you're a doctor, but we're questioning your sanity.
That's bizarre.
Yeah.
Wow.
So tell me about what kind of food do you eat in China? Or did you bring your own lunch?
No, we eat what they serve us, and it's variable. I can't say that I eat everything that's offered. it's truly Chinese food. There's no McDonald's around. There are fish items, and there is beef and some nice vegetables.
Uh-huh.
But there are some things that I didn't know what I was looking at and certainly didn't want to try.
Yeah.
The frustration I have is, as progressive as the country is and modern as it is and affluent as it is, they still use chopsticks, which annoys me to no end.
Count me out on that deal. I'd go mighty hungry. I just give that up.
Use your
my fingers. Yeah, that's right.
Use your fingers. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I did bring a fork and a knife this time. So I had U.S. equipment along.
Over there, if they want to go to an American restaurant, do they have a fat guy sitting in a lawn chair barbecuing like we do here with a Chinese restaurant?
Right.
Well, Shanghai is, I haven't seen much of it, but you look at photos of the downtown area, it is very cosmopolitan. It's very advanced. And I would think that, Greg, you could probably find some nice American venues in the downtown area proper, but we never got near there. Mm. We're more in the countryside, and we're dealing with native food and traditional food.
Hmm. So you never felt threatened or like they didn't want you there? Did they pretty well accept you?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we stood out. We were the only Americans in the area where we were in this park system and at the hotel. But I do remember, I think the last day or next to last day, I saw some blondes walking along the shoreline, and I thought, no, those are tourists. And we got closer to them, and they're from Sweden. So we came across a tour group from Sweden, but that's the first time I had seen that.
Is there a lot of people fishing?
No.
No?
It's very limited. There's only two fishing boats on this lake.
Wow.
And access to this lake is nearly impossible. The only reason I got to fish it is because my fishing partner has a connection with someone who can get us in there. This is not a trip that you can just get on the internet, contact an outfitter, and book a week. It's just not going to happen.
Wow.
And even my partner, his contact may not be available to get him in after next year.
Oh, my gosh.
We're not even sure we're going back next year, and we tend to think if we do, it could be our very last trip.
Is there any place else you can chase the yellow-cheeked carp?
As I understand it, they're found throughout Asia, even into Russia on the Amur River.
Mm-hmm.
But I also understand that the lake we're fishing has probably the very biggest specimens, that most fish are going to run under 20 pounds in other locations. And that's partly because I don't think China does a very good job of protecting their natural resources and their fish and game habitat. I get the sense they pretty much exploit everything. And so what may have been a great fishery 100 years ago is no longer a great fishery. But this fishery, for some reason, has thrived and been a little bit protected, and these fish are able to reach their potential.
Is there any other types of game fish in China that you would chase after?
No.
Now,
my partner in this lake, there are fish called sky gazers and then mandarin perch. And the mandarin perch remind me a lot of the smallmouth bass that we have here. And he was interested in catching some of those, and he did. But I was pretty much focused on just catching the yellow-cheeked carp, and that was the only reason I was over there. I tend to do that when I go on my trips, like to Brazil. I'm not interested in the catfish where some guys are. I just want to chase the peacock bass. And then Papua New Guinea, there's barramundi there. But I'm mostly there for the Papua New Guinea bass. So I get kind of tunnel vision on stuff like that.
I've got a partner like that. If it ain't crappie, it ain't nothing.
No, I like anything that bites on my line.
What?
Yeah, I do. I get distracted real easy.
You're the crappie king.
Switching directions a little bit, talking about controlled fishing, talk a little bit about the Golden Dorado that you fish for down in Argentina.
Yes, that is a tremendous freshwater fish. It's a river fish found throughout Argentina. And if you can imagine a smallmouth bass hitting 50 pounds, that's what a Dorado is.
Wow.
These fish are incredible. And we fished on the Uruguay River below the El Salto Dam. And again, like this lake in China, that location on the Uruguay River produces the biggest Dorado, up to 55, 60 pounds. And they are one tough fish. They just wreck your equipment.
Oh, cool.
They remind me a lot of tarpon, where your equipment doesn't last very long because they just destroy everything.
Oh, how fun.
And they're a
beautiful
fun fish. And they jump. And they're beautiful, and they fight so hard in that current, and then they jump like crazy.
Wow.
Tremendous, tremendous fish.
We are speaking with Dr. Scott Krug. Dr. Krug, have you had any, I know you've traveled in a lot of places that most of us have never had a chance to go to. Have you had any dangerous trips or any close calls anywhere that you've been?
Your partner there, Greg, was with me on probably the worst trip of my life to Brazil for the peacock bass. Real quickly, it's a long story, but we flew in to camp with low cloud cover, and our pilot had never flown there, and it was a jungle runway cut next to the river, not a float plane type situation. They landed on the runway, and he had never flown there and was quite concerned about landing on this runway with this low cloud cover. And he circled and circled above the clouds and kept trying to spot the runway down below, and finally took it down into the clouds, and we broke through about 150 feet above the treetops.
Wow.
And the runway was lined straight up perfectly, and I thought, nice job.
Yeah.
And then we landed. We hit the runway at the close end like you should, and we came to a stop in 150 yards, and we all got thrown forward in our seats, and it just was a huge, harsh, abrupt landing. And we got out of that plane right away because we knew something was wrong. And here the guy, the pilot, had failed to deploy the landing gear.
Oh, bad idea.
Bad deal.
Yeah.
He ought to fly for FedEx.
Oh, man.
Oh, man. That's terrible.
So did it damage the plane enough? Could you use it, or did you want to get back in it?
Yeah, I wrecked the plane. First off, when you do a belly landing, a fuselage landing, you're supposed to shut the engines down. Well, the engines were still turning.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was a twin-engine Seneca, and those props are, you know, aluminum, and they all were bent backwards in a perfect parabolic curve identically. They didn't snap off. They were all bent backwards in a 90-degree turn. The fuselage was all torn up. You know, the whole bottom of the plane was wrecked.
Oh, my.
Wow.
And that's what we were looking at when we got out of the plane. And then Greg and the rest of the fishermen were coming after us in twin-engine, I think, caravans. And I thought, they're not going to be able to land on this runway because we're on there and we're stuck. But they came in on the other end and they reversed the engines and they got the planes down. And then So Greg joined me because he was my partner. And all my tackle was with him. So once the other planes got there, I wasn't as concerned. But then the rest of the week was miserable with high water. We had a fire on our boat, and we hit a tree in the water, and we're taking in water, and we nearly sunk the boat. And
what?
It was a tough trip, wasn't it, Greg?
It was. Actually, a side story, they flew a couple of mechanics out. They took a tripod and lifted that plane up, dropped the landing gear, changed the oil, changed the props, and flew that plane out.
I don't think I'd be on that plane, at least not with that pilot.
Huh. Wonder about the insurance claim. My goodness. Unbelievable.
We flew into Costa Rica one time, and you take a little commuter plane to the resort, and our pilot was there asleep. And I'm looking at him, and I'm looking at the runway, and he's asleep. So I start coughing and just trying to do anything to, you know, not startle him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some of these local guys, not the most trustworthy people in the world.
Wow.
But you kind of skipped over this. Your boat caught on fire. What happened?
All right. Well, we had really high water. The day before we flew into camp, I recall the water, they told us, went up 4 feet in one day. And then our first day there, it went up another 4 feet. So we had an 8-foot change in 2 days.
Wow.
And the river was flooding out into the trees. And then when that happens, all the junk on the shoreline and in the jungle gets washed out into the river. So we're going downstream, downriver from the camp, and Greg and I and the driver, the guide, are sitting three across in the middle of the boat, and there's this big telephone pole-like tree in the middle of the river. And I remember pointing it out to him about 150, 200 feet before we hit it.
Oh,
and he didn't care.
What?
He hit it. He wow. hit it full speed, 30 miles an hour with the boat. The engine blows off the back of the transom up in the air. It stays on the transom, but it flips up. The cowling comes off and hits us in the back. There's parts everywhere.
What?
And we're dead in the water.
Wow.
And we think, great, we've just wrecked this engine. And we look at the lower unit. Everything was fine. The prop was fine. We put the cowling and the parts back. We dropped it back in the water, and it started.
Wow.
And then it started. It was running, so we put it in gear. And I thought, well, if the prop shaft isn't bent, we're going to be okay. And it turns out the prop shaft wasn't bent. And so we kept fishing. And then the next spot, and we keep going downriver. And the next spot, after we're done fishing it, we got 4 inches of water in the bottom of the boat. And so we turn the bilge on and bilge it out. We put the boat up on plane, and we look in the back under the – we lift the hatch to the back deck and look down below, and there's a little old faithful blowing up through the bottom of the – hull right in front of the transom. We punched a hole in the bottom of the boat.
Oh, my God.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. My goodness. Unbelievable.
It was an adventure, not a fishing trip.
Yeah. Being the rocket scientists we were, we just kept fishing and going downriver, bilging out the boat after each stop until
naturally
several hours later, we were ready to move, and we turned on the bilge, and it wouldn't work.
Wow.
And now we've got 300 pounds of water in the boat or more,
wow.
plus the three of us, and we had to go back, but we weren't sure we could get it up on plane. But we did.
Wow.
Wow.
What an adventure.
And then I remember Greg pulled the plug on the transom, and we watched the water go out through the transom plug and the water coming in, and we had steady state, so we made it back to camp. And then the boat caught on fire, and they were working on the bilge.
I'm never going fishing with you guys. Never.
Yeah.
We're out of radio time.
Dang. Well, yeah. Dr. Krug, we're going to have you back on just to swap some stories.
Oh my goodness! Don't hang around with Greg anymore.
Yeah,
he's a Jonas.
He makes good coffee, though.
Yeah. He does do that.
Well, thank you so much for getting up and being with us this morning. I really enjoyed your stories.
You're very welcome. It was my pleasure.
We've got to have you back.
Yeah.
As is all there
gotta
is to it.
Stories.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's great.
Man, thank you very much, Doc.
Thank you.
Man, bye. What a great guy. Well, how do you find these people? Or they find you?
I'm kind of like a bad penny. I just
evidently.
Show up in places, you know, that
weird.
I met him in peacock bass fishing.
Wow. Wow. I'll tell you what, this show goes by too quick.
Yeah, I know. And I need to go shopping for a pickup truck.
I tell you what, I got the guy. Right hand up. You need a Chevrolet Silverado. That other brand won't start a lot of times.
Dodge.
Hey, they sell Dodges too. ReedAutomotiveGroup.com. Got a great load of them in the other day. Boy, Mark, you'll see this brown one.
Oh.
It is so pretty.
Well,
you would love it.
My son, he's got a Silverado, and it's just the nicest truck I've ever been in. Period.
Isn't it wonderful?
Oh, it's just, yeah, it's unbelievable.
We're talking about Trev and Reed up there, but gee whiz, why do people come from Des Moines, Iowa, Lincoln, Nebraska, clear out here in Hutchinson, Kansas to buy at Reed Chevrolet? Price,
yep.
Well, service after sale.
But once you get there, the experience
yeah.
is just unlike
just
anywhere else.
Just good people.
Yep.
Just good people. I guess I just can't say enough good things about them. I don't do justice on this commercial. So if you want to save a great big sack of nickels, you better get up there. Today would be a good day for you to have a brand new pickup. Tell you what, that wraps up for this edition of Midwest Outdoors. Greg, thanks for lining up that guest.
I appreciate it.
Yeah,
man.
He was
always
fun.
Enjoy coming
he was
in.
Fun.
Good stories.
Wow.
And we just scratched the surface, I got a feeling.
He's lucky to be alive, sounds to me
yeah.
like.
Hanging with me, yes.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Tell you what, that wraps it up for this edition of the Midwest Outdoors. We got to go for this week. The next time we see you, I hope we see you in the great outdoors.
Have a great week, everybody.